Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me today is my special guest, Jeffrey Alan Schechter, who is the creator and executive producer of one of my favorite TV shows, Stitchers, on Freeform. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey.
Oh, it's so nice to be back again. And thank you for saying it's one of your favorite shows, because there's a lot of shows out there, and if we're good enough for you, we're good enough for anybody, I say.
I hope so. I mean, I have discerning and very, very picky tastes, but I enjoy stories where the characters, there's no reset button at the end of the episode. And you have taken that character development / catastrophe arc to a new level of artistic pain for these characters.
Wow, thank you.
So, I mean, you just... You have the characters in the show are a wide variety of people from different backgrounds who've come together for this project. They have their own individual foibles and challenges, but they step up to the plate to get the job done in investigating these murders and helping each other out. And that dynamic is rare to me, and I love it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I can take a certain amount of credit, but a lot of it really has to go to our incredible cast. I mean, they've taken the words that originally were there and started breathing life into it, and then the writers going, ooh, that's an interesting shade that Kyle just added, or Emma, or Tesh, or Allison, and then they sort of amplify that, and the actors take that and run with that further. But it's we've been very blessed with a really creative, enthusiastic, engaged cast, and it's to the point where whatever it is I thought these characters were when I was first writing the pilot is completely supplanted by who our cast had turned them into. So mm-hmm. It's like I don't remember a time when Cameron and Kirsten didn't exist in this world. I feel like I've been with them forever. And that's just because of the energy and life that Kyle and Emma have put into those characters, and the same with the rest of the cast.
Mm-hmm. And the fan fascination with all different characters just goes to show how many, just the diversity of the cast, the diversity of the character behaviors appeal to different people, but everybody can appreciate the stories.
Yeah. We have the backstories on all our characters are related in some way, that they're all kind of were going through life alone in one way or another. Even Linus, who's got loving parents that the rest of the characters don't have, but kind of he felt like he's somewhat different from his parents. So, you know, there's a lot of coming together of these diverse people who shared this sort of sense of being soul travelers in the world, and they create this family.
Mm-hmm. Now, I should warn our listeners, this is going to be spoilerific for season two. So if you haven't finished your binge watch, you know, hit pause now, go finish watching the season, and then come back.
Absolutely, yeah. It's there's no question about season two that will go unanswered.
I have so many questions. First, what inspired the addition of so many, I guess, stressful personal challenges for everybody?
But at the very end of the...
Even just at the end, but they were set up during the beginning, because you have Kirsten starting out feeling emotions again for the first time she was a child and being overwhelmed and trying to identify, you know, hey, what is this? This is something I'm not used to. You have Cameron deciding he's going to pursue companionship away from Kirsten. You have Maggie dealing with a rather enigmatic new boss. You have Fisher dealing with the aftermath of his being shot last season. You have Camille dealing with her, for lack of a better word, slightly abusive brother. and coming into her own, and then Linus stepping out and becoming his own man. Like, everybody's going through a major upheaval in their personal life at the same time when the Stitchers program itself is going through a shakeup.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. I'm beginning to feel like a very evil, manipulative person now.
Yeah. Well, you haven't gotten the George R. R. Martin levels yet, so.
No, not quite yet.
So, what was the inspiration, the reasoning for just saying, let's shake everybody's tree?
Well, it's the whole the show itself is about family. It really is. And we could say season one was thematically, you could say it's about the creation of family. And then season two was, okay, now that we've created a family, how do you deal with family? So pretty much all the big dramatic elements that interjected themselves into our characters' lives, be it Theo, Camille's brother, or a new girlfriend for Cameron, who's a girl who's Nina's trying to become a part of a family that doesn't seem to have space for her. Kirsten's obsessive drive to find her father, mm-hmm. and eventually bringing her half-sister, Ivy. Fisher, you know, people going to him for relationship advice, and he's like, I'm the guy who screwed up marriage. I'm like the last person. And then by the end of the season, we finally meet his wife. So if season one is about the creation of family, season two is like, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with the family you've got? And is it worth it? Right? You know, it's like, you know, you pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. Well, these were friends who either explicitly or implicitly picked each other to be family, and there's no going back. So there's, that was sort of the defining theme for season two, is dealing with the family you got. And, you know, if we're lucky enough to get a season three, I would say that season three would be about fighting for family. Now that I know that family is worth fighting for, I suppose you can say that about season two, is family worth fighting for? Season three is like, yeah, it's worth fighting for. Now, how far will I go? Right? So, you know, I'm trying to use family as our defining characteristic for all our seasons.
Mm-hmm. Because sometimes families that you build with friends, the bonds there can be stronger than the bonds with the families you were born into. You see that time and again, mm-hmm. in movies, TV, and especially in real life. So that carrying that theme to its next level, dealing with more secrets, more fallout, I'm looking forward to that, because I have a ton of questions and I will ask them, and feel free to say, nope, can't answer that yet.
I promise not to be shy.
Okay. Is there a connection between Mitchell Blair, Daniel Stinger, and Liam? Because Liam coming back up in the picture, in Maggie's, shall we say, field of vision and definitely under suspicion, that was a twist I didn't see coming. I did not see Liam coming back like that.
Oh, interesting. Well, we knew after season one, where he's asking somebody what's plan B, and it's mm-hmm. kind of like, yeah, I could stick around. Right? So we knew that he at least had his sights set on Kirsten. He wasn't what we thought he was when he was sort of romancing Kirsten in season one. And he's dropped enough hints, and certainly by episode 10, when he's taken a payoff by Stinger himself to propose to Kirsten, which kind of explains what happened back in season one. So we know that Liam is at least in bed with Stinger. Now the question is, how much does Blair know? Especially in light of you have Les Turner being eliminated, and we kind of understand that Les Turner probably had a closer relationship with Stinger, than Blair does, just because of there's that when we go into Turner's memory and there's kind of that struggle. We understand that Stinger had access to Turner and could talk to him. Blair seems like he legitimately wants to find Stinger, and maybe doesn't have the same access or the same trust that Stinger gave to Turner. So there's an overlap between them. I don't know that Blair was pulling any strings with Liam at all, but there's definitely, you know, we can argue somebody must have tipped off Stinger that Kirsten was coming with the NSA in episode 10 to arrest him. That's why he took off.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly could have been Blair, maybe it was somebody else, but I think there's enough suspicion that Blair is in contact with Stinger or had been in contact with Stinger, but I personally don't believe that he had the same relationship that Turner did.
Yeah, the putting some of the pieces together about what Turner was doing with hiding Ed Clark's body in stasis, hiding Kirsten's mother, who was still alive after all this time, and the fact that so many other people involved in the program know more about Kirsten than she does, you kind of see where she gets obsessed about wanting to track down her father, you know, choke slam him up against a wall and say, tell me what's going on.
Right. Yeah, that was there's a kind of a principle I like that, you know, like who's ultimately the big bad in Stitches? And it's definitely leaning towards Stinger is the ultimate bad guy, you know, like whatever happens at the end of our 27th season, you know, it's somehow going to have to involve, you know, the bringing down of the conquering of the big bad. And you can sometimes, well, often you can learn a lot about your hero by contrasting the hero with your villain. And same thing about the villain. Like if you don't have your villain, you can learn a lot about your villain by looking at what your hero does, because the villain, you know, Stinger is in some way what Kirsten could turn into if she loses her moral compass, kind of like what she did in season 2. So now by extrapolating that, you go, okay, Stinger is obsessive. You know, he's driven. It's, you know, if Kirsten is trying to find out what happened to Mom, then Stinger is also willing to find out, wants to find out what happened to Mom, right? That's the whole thing about where did you move the asset? Then we learn out the asset was Mom, and Stinger was willing to kill Turner to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Kirsten's journey is, you know, what am I in danger of becoming if I lose my moral center? Well, I'm obsessed about finding my mom and my dad, but I'm not ready to kill yet. But if it keeps going, would she get to that point? Would she kill to be reunited with her mom? So it creates that kind of cool tension. You know, she may be closer to Stinger emotionally than she'd like to admit. You know, of course, now you got me rambling, so I've completely forgotten what that was thinking.
But no, that's a good answer. The I will admit I think putting together some of the pieces raised a few more questions to me. Seeing how Kirsten's friends could not really handle her having emotions and watching her spiral into this obsessive frenzy and not knowing how to help her break out of it or at least see it a little bit more clearly. That position of, I love this person, I care for this person, I don't know how to help them, and that's making me crazy. That came across very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was part of the whole, how do you deal with them? You know, how do you deal with them? Now that I have a family, you know, when a family member is kind of it seems like they're going off the rails. Do you say something? Do you keep your mouth shut? How do you show that love for that family? Mm-hmm. So that's exactly it. You know, it's like, you know, look, you're getting lost in the succession, right? I care about you. Yeah, I'm with Nina. Doesn't mean I'm not, you know, I don't care for you. So it's kind of learning all those rules, you know, for all of them, you know, it's because it's just so new.
Now, I want to go a little bit into speculative storytelling for a second here,
okay.
if I may. The revelation that Daniel Stinger has his own quantum computing system and has been using it to, shall we say, interfere with Kirsten Stitches, to me, and this is purely speculation, it seemed like he was trying to sidetrack Kirsten's progress at becoming a better Stitcher. Now, whether or not that was so he could get the jump, the technological advantage over what the NSA had already, is one thing. But then why would Turner have financed that? Because it's a competition to what he's trying to do. Unless there's a second part to the Stitcher's program that we don't know yet, is that
or unless you're wrong about Stinger's motivation?
Oh,
I would explore that.
Okay, I'll have to
perhaps he wants her to be, you know, the best possible Stitcher. He wants her to advance in her training as quickly as possible. And then you can start asking, well, why would he want that? You know, and then see what that, you know, that thought experiment leads you.
that makes sense, because a lot of parents push their children to achieve greatness so that some of that reflected greatness shines back on them.
Mm-hmm.
But then setting up this false memory of her and her mother where she just wants to stay there and do nothing else, that seems like a little bit of a unintended consequence. I don't know if it was unintended or intentional, but it's a really disturbing way to end the season, because you're like, no,
sure.
I need to find out what this is all about.
Right. Well, it certainly plays into the, if somebody out there wanted to feel like, yeah, everything that, if we understand that Stinger was running the anomaly the entire season, and finally at the end, he leads her into a trap, you certainly can be forgiven for thinking that that this was, everything was just to butter her up and get her to trust him so that she could lead him into a trap. Yeah, so that's the, it certainly would lean into that, which would certainly confound the question of Stinger wanting to help her get better at it. But you know, if the faith smile upon us and we get a season three, then exactly what those motivations are will become very, very clear.
Okay.
But to say it now, it's like, you know, it's too juicy a story point, you know, sadly, to divulge at this moment.
Well, I do have another question. The first time we see the boy in the red cap, you just see like the side of him, the red cap. But when I first saw him, the very first time I saw him, I'm like, that's the kid Cameron, because I recognized the haircut. And I recognized.
When you saw the, is that when he takes the cap off or just the first time?
The very first time where you see like the kid standing off to the side and you can't really identify him. It was in the episode where they stitched into Fisher's mentor. And
right,
she's
yeah,
questioning
yeah.
the guy, and you see the kid, and she's like, there's a kid here.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the haircut. Right. I'm like, that's the little kid Cameron. Is she having flashbacks or side effects that are affecting her health? What's this? And to see it.
Well, it's that you spotted him. It's like, he was like, I was season one, we had wheelchair man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were an attentive viewer would notice wheelchair man appearing in all these different episodes before we even say anything about him, you know, before, you know, and it's ultimately when he starts becoming really obvious, it's like, oh, wait a minute, he's been here the whole time.
Yeah.
So we had that. I would tease you a little bit and tell you that episode 3 was not the first appearance of the boy in the red cap.
Oh. Okay, now so, I'm going to have to go back
and... I'll spare you agony, and hours that you could likely spend with family members rather than rewatching episodes. Boy in the Red Cap makes his first appearance in episode 2, and that's the episode with Ellie, super hacker.
Mm-hmm.
And when Kirsten is stitched into boyfriend's memory, the one who died from the insulin overdose.
Right.
She's in downtown L.A., and she's following him behind him on the sidewalk, and she's been stitched in, Boy with the Red Cap crosses frame.
Oh, nice. Very
probably
nice.
Probably less than a second. It probably doesn't care. I mean, he's barely there. But he cares. That's his actual first appearance. And then episode 3, wait, there's a kid here. And then by the time we get to episode 4, it's like, okay, now there's something going on.
Right. Okay, cool. And that led to my other question. How did Daniel Stinger pull that avatar out unless he had been sort of eavesdropping and watching what Kirsten was seeing in the stitches?
Well, that certainly could be part of it, but there was, here's a little Stitcher's trivia question for you, there was a place where young Cameron and young Kirsten and Daniel Stinger were all together.
The hospital scene, right.
In the hospital. So he knows enough that kid who is in the hospital is our current, Cameron Goodkin. And if he's getting enough information about the Stitches program from the Turner, well, I guess he doesn't want to certainly be Turner or Blair or whoever, or even Liam, because Liam is informing. So he knows that kid has turned into Cameron, who is now is somehow very, very important and somebody that she would trust. So, and especially because that's a very sweet moment in the hospital where he was helping young Kirsten feel better. And even though we kind of cut to Stinger allegedly or supposedly asleep in the chair, we would understand that he wasn't really asleep. He kind of witnessed that moment. And if Stinger has the memory, he's involved in the memory business, so I wouldn't have a problem believing that he's got an incredibly trained memory or he naturally has a photographic memory, so he can recall all the details of Cameron as a kid, and he builds an avatar.
Interesting. I did not make that connection, but it makes more sense than him eavesdropping on Kirsten's stitches, because that would be just really creepy.
Well, clearly he can access what's happening in the stitches. I mean, in order to insert himself, in real time, into the stitch. So he's got some ability to do that. So that's not so far-fetched. I think those two pieces work together. That he's able to eavesdrop on the stitches, and that's why he knows what's going on. Plus, he uses the vehicle of this trusted person from her past that he knows that she has this emotional bond with, and that'll help him get to her that much more effectively.
Excellent. Well, I hope that there is a season 3 to see how some of my questions are answered and what other sort of mayhem you guys cook up for our dearly beloved cast.
Yeah, thanks. It's funny. I just really for my own purposes, I put together a little document because I was sitting there going, I probably should create some document that kind of says, well, here's what episode 3001 of the first episode of season 3 should look like. Because I don't know if you can tell from talking to me, but also in other interviews and things like that, people kind of think I'm being cute when, I'll ask me a question about a character and did the person do this, and I'll go, or what's the character going to do? And I go, they haven't told me what they're going to do yet. So it sounds like I'm trying to be cute or maybe artsy-fartsy about it, where it's like, oh, the character's, Jeff talks to his character. But it's, you know, kind of like when you get into the zone of telling the story, the characters do have a certain reality. And you can create a situation, and then the characters, it's almost like the gap between the brain and the paper goes away, and just the characters start acting the way, it's almost like you're taking dictation. The characters are doing it, you're right. You're not driving the characters are driving you to write what they're doing. It's an odd, wonderful place to be, you know, as a writer. People talk about that in music, right? The music wrote itself, you know, the music came out of me, but these are living characters now, so they kind of make their own decisions, and right? You know, I'll sometimes try to push them in a certain direction and then take notes and see what they do. So I started creating the season 3, episode 1 document, just like something came down. Suddenly, the characters just started going, here's what I'm going to do, and that's when I'm going, wow, that's cool. Well done, Camille. You know, well done, Fisher. You know, so it's like it became very an interesting document to create. You know, and I got very excited for that episode. I hope we get to make it.
I hope you get to make it too. And as someone who has written stories where the characters have gone off on their own tangent and I just had to follow, I completely understand. Totally understand what you're talking about there.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. It's really hard to explain. I think they're like kind of you know, people who, you know, who kind of don't write or don't have a, you know, a particularly creative place. But it happens even, I think, when people are, you know, feel like you're really into math and you're studying and you go, I don't remember learning that concept, but somehow that concept made itself known to me. I mean, you know, it's a weird, you know, weird zone that you get into when you're, you know, when you're stretching that part of the brain. So the character part of my brain just sort of takes over.
Nice. Well, speaking for a lot of fans out there, I enjoy living with these characters. I enjoy the story that's built up around them. I truly hope we get a season 3. I hope ABC lets us know that sooner rather than later, because I don't like being kept in suspense that long. It happens.
I hear you. But you know, I can't honestly say whatever happens, the Freeform has been so supportive and so great to us on the show. And, it's like I have to imagine that any network, any decision like this, you know, it's got 1,000 moving parts. And me not being a network executive, you know, I know 4 or 5 of the moving parts. So, you know, in the event that turns out that we don't end up with season 3, it certainly won't be because we did not have the love and support of our executive team over at the network. I really mean that.
Well, my thanks goes out to them for giving us 2 seasons so far, and I hope the fans can persuade them to give us more. But thank you for your time today, Jeffrey.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. And thanks also to the fans for getting us the Teen Choice nominations. So that meant a lot to us as well. We do have like the greatest fans in the world, and that means a lot as well to the network, you know, to see how engaged the fans are with the show. And people like you. So thanks so much for even wanting to talk to me about this. It's such a pleasure.
You're very welcome. It's Jeffrey Allen Schechter, the creator of Stitchers. Again, like I said, one of my current favorite TV shows. And please, if you have a chance to go catch it on demand or on iTunes or wherever else it pops up, maybe Hulu still, go check it out. You will not be disappointed. But again, thank you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care.
Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
think I may have mentioned before just how much I love Stitchers, in case that wasn't obvious from our talk. I think I could very easily have talked for an hour with him, but getting the big questions out of the way is fun, and maybe we can continue the conversation later with some of the smaller ones, just little nitpicky things. A lot of changes were hinted at the end of that season finale. We saw Linus's father perhaps not doing as well after surgery as everyone hoped. We still don't know what the deal is with Maggie's son in Iraq, whether he's just injured or might be severely injured or dead. And Kirsten's situation. How are they going to pull her out of what may or may not be a trap set by her dad? You know, the honeypot, she's stuck there. She wants to stay there. How long can she stay in there before her mind-body connection collapses? Does her body give out? Does she die? What happens? It's not like they can take her out of the tank or out of the Stitcher system without her mind losing the connection. A lot of stuff going on there. And I truly, truly hope we get a season 3 to find out how this all works out and where things are going. And I have to wonder, did Stinger kill Liam? And how deeply is Ivy involved in what she was helping Daniel Stinger do? I mean, that's a really big question. Because her existence was given to Kirsten by her father through the young Cameron avatar in one of her Stitches. So you have to wonder, what is that all about? Anyway, lots to talk about, lots of TV coming up. Winona Earp is winding down. Killjoys will be starting soon. I'm still trying to get a hold of people to talk to for Winona Earp, but I don't want to overwhelm everybody. If I could talk to two or three people and make it like one big episode, that'd be cool. So that's my plan. But as we know, even the best laid plans can end up going in completely unexpected directions. Well, we should have made a right turn at Albuquerque. And yes, that's a Bugs Bunny reference for everyone who's listening who's under the age of 30. Bugs Bunny was my hero. Hush. Anyway, that will do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments or any insight into Stitchers, if you're watching the show, feel free to call in. That number is 602-635-6976. Or you can email a question in to summer@sliceofscifi.com. And if you record your own message, you can send it to that email as well. Check us out. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on TuneIn, and leave us a review on iTunes if you could. There may be some changes coming up to some of the layout on the iTunes page. I'm still playing around with that. But feel free to leave a review or a rating if you're enjoying the show. Check us out on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi or @SliceOfSciFiTV. Check us out on Google Plus, Slice of Sci-Fi, and of course, we're on YouTube, all those cool review videos that Noah and Darren do. We should be getting some follow-up reports from Phoenix Comic-Con added on there pretty soon, I hope. So stay tuned for those. And as always, you can come to the websites, sliceofscifi.com, sliceofscifi.tv, WritersAfterDark.com, PopCultureGeeks.com, KickAssMysticNinjas.com, and it's ComicBookDay.com. I'd like to thank everyone for your donations and your pledges through Patreon. Your support is keeping the lights on here, literally. Having the shows being hosted, having the media being hosted, everyone who's donating to that, you're helping pay those bills. You really are. You have no idea how grateful I am, how thankful I am that you guys are helping me keep this train going. And I have some ideas for some perks for some of the higher level patrons. And we'll see how that goes. Of course, I'd like to extend my eternal gratitude to the geek rock band Cy-Fried for the music they've provided for the show. You want to check out any more music by them, go ahead and over to cy-friedband.com and tell them Summer sent ya. But that'll do it. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.